David Bohm Seminars, Series 1, November 7th, 1987, 11:15 morning session, Oak Grove School, Ojai, California.
Ready? Right. Well, let me see. We're at this crucial point that it's really the question of the observer and the observed, really, that or thinker and the thought. Right. That I'm proposing that thought is a process that's just ongoing, and not only inside each person, but it passes between people and over through the whole culture and the whole society and over many generations, right? Because the thoughts of Aristotle are still our thoughts, and so on they can be. And perhaps all sorts of thoughts that have happened in the past are still in us somehow, which we're not aware of, right? And it's like in a process going on outside, like the wind and the clouds and the rain and so on. It's an ongoing process, right? But we have the impression, or the whole culture says that, and we experience it that way, that thought is controlled by us, right? Each person has thoughts going on inside of him, and he controls them, right? And or he should control them if he doesn't, right? And I'm saying that these are two very different notions of the structure of thought, and it's crucial, this difference is crucial. If you have a mistaken notion of the structure of thought at this rather deep level, it's going to have very serious consequences in the whole of life, right? Everything we want to do. Now, so what is the point? That thought is going on. We don't know exactly where it starts on it. Somehow it's going on in the brain or in the nervous system and in between people as they communicate. And this thought has an intellectual function, which you can have thoughts, you recognize this thought, perhaps you put it in words. And in addition, it has also, it's an emotional function, it has a neurophysiological function of all sorts of chemicals are released in the system. And it has a muscular function. It may produce tensions in the muscles and so on, as you were referring to. And it may even be that the earliest form of thought was a kind of tension in the muscles. You see, it gradually developed into more abstract thought. For the moment, we seem to be most conscious of the more intellectual levels of the thought and are not seeing the connection to the other levels, you see. Now, failure to see that means that we will inevitably make the mistake that when the other levels go into operation, thought will assume them to be independent. And if they are feelings, it will assume they're deep gut feelings or deep emotions, things of great significance. See, for example, suppose I think there is something dangerous, and 3 seconds later I get a sinking sensation in the solar plexus. I say, well, that proves it, because that's an instinctive response to danger, right? Saying, when you see danger, you get that sinking feeling which warns you that it's dangerous, right? So you say, now I have gotten a warning that something dangerous, right? I've not followed the fact that 3 seconds later it was the thought that something is dangerous that produced this warning. See, this warning is now completely misunderstood. It's no more warning than the thought was, right? But it is taken to be a real warning of danger, right? Therefore, your thought begins to think some more about this danger, and it builds up some more, right? Now, you have a runaway, you can then get into a runaway fear situation of panic, right? And building it up, saying, thinking more about what the danger is and how to escape it, and stirring yourself up some more, and so on. The mistake is that that thought has the content that there is a thinker who is producing thought, and the thought has no effect other except what the thinker decides to give it, right? And vice versa, the thinker is not affected by what's going on except when he wants to be. And therefore, That is a structure which simply does not exist, right? Any more than the telephone exists in the television image. You see, you may get a very strong feeling that there is a telephone in there and somebody is answering it, but in fact, nothing of the kind is going on at all, right? There are only electronic impulses and little spots of light and some sounds coming out of an electronic device, right? So how are you able to get such a strong impression of reality out of so little, right? The hero may be dangling over a cliff and you get sinking sensations in the solar plexus, right? perhaps in fantasy the same thing happens. We project a fantasy inside of ourselves in danger and get sinking sensations or pleasure or whatever, right? So perhaps nothing of the kind is going on at all, but merely but that the fantasy nevertheless is real in the sense that it has real effects, that something is really going on to produce that impression, and the whole system is, as it were, watching and behaving accordingly as if that were real, right? So on one hand, the fantasy is almost nothing. On the other hand, it's tremendous, right? It's a tremendous reality, right? See, but we may have a language which says there's either fantasy or reality. We can't really pay attention properly to this because we say, if it's fantasy, it's nothing. If it's reality, it's good, solid stuff, powerful, and so on. And therefore, how are we going to make that distinction? You see, that because, you know, fantasy is real and produces very powerful effects, right? Now, one of the tests for reality is whatever produces powerful effects, whatever resists change, whatever stands by itself. But this fantasy does just that, right? This fantasy of the observer looking at the observed has all those qualities so that it satisfies the test for reality. Therefore, we'll experience it as real. Whatever satisfies the test for reality, you will experience as real, whether it's real or not. That's how illusion is possible, right? You see, the magician creates illusion by your failing to see the connection between what he's doing and what happens. You assume that it happens independently. Therefore, it's magic, right? If it ever happened independently that way, it would be magic. If you don't see what he did, then your senses feel it as magic, right? If you once see what he did, then you say, no, it's nothing at all. You see the trick, and it's not, you know, it's not real, right? But there is a reality. The reality is that he did a trick, right? See, every fantasy has some reality underlying it and also produces some real effects. If you believe the magician did magic, you will act accordingly. It has a big effect, you see. So therefore, you have to be careful about this distinction of real and unreal. That it's sort of very dynamic, right? If you accept this conclusion or assumption that there is this thinker who is thinking the thought and controls it, then you will act accordingly. The whole system will act accordingly. Right? One of the actions would be, I've got to do something about that anger or whatever it is, the fear. So I've got to control it, right? If it were an external object, that would be right. If this is doing something wrong, and I say I must control it and make it right, you see. But if it's just me, then there's no point. You see, I'm saying on the one hand, look, I am thinking the thought that I have good reason to be angry or good reason to be afraid. On the other hand, I'm thinking I should not be afraid. You see, those are two thoughts put together are absurd, right? If I have good reason to be afraid, I should be afraid. Right? If I have good reason to be angry, I should be angry. I mean, why do we say I shouldn't be angry, though I have good reason to be angry? Right? So logically, it makes no sense. It collapses, right? Now, as a thought, it is not it is an irrational thought, right? But still, it goes on, because, well, we have to go into all that. Why? What keeps it going? You see, to be shown the fact that this is a trick, that it is a fantasy, that it is irrational, I suggest is not going to change it. Does everybody see that? Not by itself. You see, that doesn't mean it has no value to show it, but there's more to it than that, right? You see, it's like a map. You see, if you are given a map, you may, if you know how to read maps, you'll perhaps be directed towards something, but if you don't know how to read maps, it doesn't help you. If you don't know how to relate the map to the territory, then the map is of no significance. So we say, this is a map, but how do you find your way in the territory or in the actual fact which the map is mapping?
Well, it seems to me that if one can be quiet enough and just pause, physically pause, one can see things differently than you did in the beginning.
Yeah, but then the problem is to be quiet. You see, let's say if you feel you have good reason to be angry, if you think that, you will not be quiet, you see.
Well, maybe at least if you're not quiet, you're not talking.
Yes, that's the step. You see, we're coming to that. It's a step. It's true. You see that the brain is in a turmoil because of all this, not only because you're stirring it up, but because you're stirring it up in a contradictory way, saying it's worse. It's bad enough to say I'm angry because I have a good reason, and then you make it still worse by saying I ought not to be angry.
But if you can just some way stopping seems to be helpful. And at the same time, not talking, but looking.
Yes, now, how will we look? You see, when someone says, I am angry, I will look at my anger. He's in trouble, right? Because, you see what I mean? That because he's saying that I am here different from my anger, looking at my anger.
But you also said that that the whole organism was sort of watching thought. So why isn't the whole organism watching already? It's made it sound like there was already some kind of watching, some kind of awareness. I mean, otherwise, how does the organism respond to thought if there's not already something turned on and watching? So there must be something watching all the time.
Yeah, well, let's say the organism responds to thought. I use that only as a metaphor. It's sort of responding to thought as if the information in it were true, right?
No, just before we ended, two people were quite intrigued by the statement that you said, I can't remember exactly, maybe somebody, there's something about that even during thought that the whole system was seeing thought. Didn't you say something?
He's sort of defining that now. I think.
You see, I'm saying that it doesn't happen that easily. You see that the system sees thought. That's if the whole system would see thought, the problem would go away. But see, what happens is the whole system sees the content of thought, not thought. You see the difference? The content of thought is, I am angry and I have good reason to be angry, and there's an observer who is looking at this anger, right?
Then you're saying there's a different thought than the
There's
content?
Also a process of thought, which is different, which is more than the content of thought. Right? Mm-hmm. You see, the process of thought is the actual movement that is taking place, which holds that content, right? You see, in order to think that, we have got to have the whole system doing all sorts of things, right?
It's the response of the whole system that gives that is the process of thought.
Yes, well, but it's also, in order to think, you have got to set this process of thought going, whatever it is. We're not conscious of that process of thought, right? Is that clear what I mean? That see, let's say you're digesting food. Well, you're not conscious. You may get a few feelings, but you're not conscious of the process of digestion, right?
But it's going on.
It's going on. When you move your arm, you're not conscious of just how you move it, right? It goes on by a complex process. When you decide to think, or whatever you want to call it, when thinking begins, you are conscious of the meaning of the thought, but you're not conscious of the process. Suppose I say, this is a table. What I'm conscious of is here is a table, right? The image of the table. A lot of stuff is going on all inside of me, which I'm not conscious of. Without that, it wouldn't be possible to think that, right? If you drugged the brain, for example, you wouldn't be able to think it. Right? The process would be interfered with.
Isn't that what meditation is? You know, when people meditate and they start thinking, it's to recognize that thinking and that process and label it thinking and not do it anymore.
If you can do it, you see, I'm going to try to say that this is not so easy to bring about, you see. That suppose if we could stop this whole process of thought about anger, then perhaps the whole thing would collapse. You see, like, say a young child may be angry for a moment, then it dissolves. But later, when he learns to think more about it and says, I have good reason to be angry, then he can go on. And as he gets older, he gets better at it. And let's say, but the whole society can, say, be angry for hundreds of years, like between Northern and Southern Ireland. Each one is constantly saying, we have good reason to be angry because you killed these people and did these outrages, and in return we made some outrages. And therefore they say, we have good reason to be angry. So the thing can go on indefinitely, right? Now, if you could stop thinking, see, let's say, if between Northern and Southern Ireland everybody stopped thinking about this, within, say, 3 seconds it might collapse, the time between the thought and the solar plexus, right? If you could stop thought for 3 seconds, but you see, what the problem is, I've been thinking for quite a while now, and there's a pipeline between the head and the solar plexus, which is full of thoughts, right? So I try to stop thinking, but meanwhile, for 3 seconds, a lot of disturbing thoughts are coming through, and it all stirs up, and don't seem to be able to stop, you see. All sorts of, you see, that if I could hold it for 3 seconds, maybe it would then vanish, right? Right? But there are different time scales, 3 seconds to this autonomic nervous system, maybe less to, say, something up here in the chest or in the head. There are probably several time scales. But see, if the whole pipeline, if you could keep the thought, no new thoughts entered the pipeline for a certain period of time, then the pipeline would finish with its thoughts, and then there would be nothing, right? Now, suppose I say, I'm going to stop thinking, you see. But it won't work, because I have those 3 seconds, and during the last 3 seconds, I probably have put in a lot of thoughts into the pipeline, which can disturb my system, and they induce more thoughts, right?
It's sort of the nature of thought that as soon as the pipeline gets clear, it feels like something's wrong.
Well, that's another thought comes in saying, I'm so used to having this pipeline full that I feel something is missing if I don't have that pipeline full, right? So I start to fill it.
That is filling it, just by saying that.
Yeah, just to say that starts to fill it, but then I add some more, right? So I begin to think about this and that, right?
So we identify our existence with all these feelings.
Yes, that's another thought, right?
But it's also, it seems to be how it works.
Yes, but that's the way thought works. If I say the telephone is ringing in the television set, that's what's happening, right? If I say I need all this, then I need it, right?
You seem to be painting a picture, if I can put it that way. Like you mentioned the TV set. Okay, we look at the TV set, and it's a box with all these little dots, which we can't perceive as dots, but we know that's the process.
Right.
But see, when we say it's electronic images, but we still watch the TV as if it was real, otherwise it wouldn't be television.
That's all right, provided that you don't believe it to be real. You see,
but television is already the result of our illusory process that makes it seem real.
But as long as you know it's going on, it's no trouble. You see, here's the problem with television. Suppose television is sending in an image under the assumption that this is news when it's actually a program made in the studio, right? And therefore, they may send out some very alarming program, and if everybody thinks it's news, there will be a panic, right? Just simply the thought, this is real, is enough to create panic, right? The thought, if they would merely put words on there, this is not real, this is a program, the panic would vanish, right?
And TV would lose its ability to...
Well, no, because you would say, this is a program, you know it. You know, when you start out...
don't watch TV as if it's not real, if they watch it as if it wasn't. What I'm saying is, we have the illusion in our mind, we've created...
No, but suppose that there were a program about atomic war, you know, nuclear war, you know, under so realistic, that looked like a newsreel, right?
Okay, all right.
This would be very alarming to everybody, right?
Right.
But Orson Welles.
Like Orson Welles, yes. But if underneath it said, this is not a news broadcast, then the panic would vanish, right?
Oh, well, that wasn't, you know, that's true. That isn't what I was trying to refer to. I was saying that it seems like the illusions that are in the mind have now created a world of illusion that keeps reinforcing the illusion.
That's true, but we're trying to get to something simple that, you know, to get into that, you see. So saying that if you could do that, then the panic would vanish, you see. Now, but suppose the population is illiterate.
Right.
Well, it doesn't do any good to have the words underneath, this is a studio program, right? You see, for example, I may say in words, what's going on in anger is a studio program, but the part of the brain which is responding is illiterate. You see, it doesn't...
right.
You see, it doesn't understand those words, right? Therefore, it doesn't reach it, right?
Right.
So that part still keeps on responding. and it stirs, and then it upsets the intellect and so on.
Well, what about this metaphysical technique to people who want to maintain their tranquility, and so they become very sensitive to emotions. Every time they feel an emotion, they quiet themselves, something like alpha, and start saying Om Mana Padme Hum. Okay, they have put that in the place of the emotion stops, and it works after fashion.
Well, it may stop the emotion, but it's not going to stop this confusion, you see, about the observer and the observed, for example. You see, that. Stopping the emotion is not the point, you see. In fact, you're off not to have the emotion. I'm going to argue that, that far from stopping the emotion, we'll have to intensify it, you see, in order to see what's happening. We'll come to that later, right? That it's crucial that we have this wrong understanding of the structure. You see, we have all this stuff going on in the pipeline. It comes down 3 seconds later and creates emotions which are wrong, right? You may now send something else down the pipeline to stop those emotions. But you're surely disturbing something else by having these two contradictory impulses. You may become unaware of the disturbance, you see. Another way to become unaware of it is just simply to say it's not happening, you see. And some people can say, you know, I won't think of it at all, and so on. But it's still there, you see.
It's a surface thing.
It's a surface thing, you see. It doesn't get at this problem, you see, that there is an inherent structural mistake going on. And if this, even if you stop your emotions, you are going to make more mistakes, you see, because when the time comes to think about something, you are still going to make this mistake about down here. You know, you won't, you know, when you're seriously thinking, you won't be able to stop those emotions, right? You'll be concentrating on what you're doing. There is something here in this question of in the nature and structure of thought that requires attention. I say attention because we have got to see this beyond thought, right? We have got to see, in some sense, beyond the content of thought. Now, if I take the television image and I say the meaning of the picture is the content, you know, there's a story going on in there are trees, there are flowers, there's mountains, there's people, but none of them are there at all, right? Now, a closer picture what's actually there is a lot of electronic impulses. That's the process. There is some sort of process going on in thought, but we are conscious of the content, right? That, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying that's a fact, right? You know, it's no use saying it's bad or good.
We have to be aware of the process and not always...
I'm suggesting that somehow we've got to be aware, somewhat aware of this process. You see, we're not aware of the process by which the thought that, that I have good reason to be angry because of being treated outrageously, through a process really takes place which you can follow electronically, whereby it comes down to here, right?
You think we could hold those two things at once?
I don't know. We're going to explore it. You see, it's a question. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. But we're trying to learn about this.
But that would be sort of how we would have to approach it. We couldn't say either or, which is sort of one of the things that thought likes to do. Either I'm going to feel anger or I'm not going to feel anger.
But that's right.
To have the content and also see the process at the same, the whole thing.
Yeah. Now, you see, if we could do that, then the problem would be different. You see, let me give an illustration. See, with the body, you have a process called proprioception. The word is long, but it didn't frighten you. The proprio means self, and ception is like perception. It means self-perception, right? Now, if you move your hand, or if I move this object, I know I have moved it without having to think or decide whether I moved it or not, right? If it moved by itself, I would know that I hadn't moved it, right? There would be an immediate knowledge. You wouldn't have to think about it, right? It would be obvious. Now, if that's damaged, it's very serious. You see, there was a woman who woke up in the middle of the night, apparently being attacked, but when the light was turned on, she was hitting herself. Now, what had happened was that she had suffered a stroke which damaged the sensory nerves and not the motor nerves. So she did not know that she was moving her hand. Therefore, she moved her hand against her face. And that the interpretation was immediately something external is hitting me, therefore it's an attack, right? You see, so the way you think about it is crucial, right? And therefore, she began to move some more to fight off the attacker, which made some more trouble. That means it was immediately interpreted as a more violent attack, right? And until the light was turned on, where it could be seen what was happening, you see. Now, You see, if we did not have proprioception physically, we would not be viable, right? Now, it seems mentally we do not have it. If I think, you know, about anger, you know, saying I have good reason to be angry because of so-and-so, and 3 seconds later there's the surge in the solar plexus, I am not aware of the fact that I have done it by thinking.
I think to be aware of the process is different from thinking about the process.
Well, we'll have to come...
There's no action, but in thinking it's always an action to reality.
Yes, well, if you're thinking about it, you won't be aware of it. But I'm saying I've got... it's a bit more complex than that, but I've got to be aware of this process. Let's put it there. If I were aware of this process while I was thinking, then I could think without trouble. You see, I could think, okay, he treated me badly and so on, he did something wrong. Then I would be aware 3 seconds later that something's happening down here, and I would know that it was just my thought. It was not very significant. It was no more information than I had before, right?
We do that all the time physically, but we don't seem to be able to do it mentally.
Yeah. If I move my... You see, if this glass moved by itself, that would be extraordinarily interesting, perhaps even frightening, right? If I moved it, you don't worry about it at all, right? It doesn't mean very much. If it moved by itself, it has a very big meaning, right? Perhaps it's magic. Now, see, if this solar plexus moves by itself, it means a deep gut feeling, which is very important. If I see it came from thinking, then it is not important, right? No more important than the thought which made it.
One of the problems is the brain is always informed by the sensations.
No, but we're saying if you could sense the thought traveling down through the pipeline...
Are there sensations that
I don't know, well, but let's use the imagination, like we were saying, creatively, you know, saying, imagine it. You see, it may not be true, it may be... You see, you have to play with the imagination, right? Play with... That suppose, for the sake of discussion, that you could sense the wave of thought traveling down the pipeline. And then it wouldn't bother you, you see. You see, you can sense the impulse. Somehow you sense that, one way or another, you sense that I moved my hand, you know, that the intention to move it was the cause of the movement. If the hand suddenly jumps by itself, you get worried because you say, my nerves are gone, you see. It's quite serious to have your hand jumping around by itself, right? Now, the... it makes all the difference in the world whether you see the connection or don't see it, right? It changes the meaning totally, and from meaning, a total change of action and being, right?
So what you're saying, David, is if you could feel this, if you could somehow make the connection between this thought and the corresponding emotional reaction, then it wouldn't regenerate, it wouldn't escalate.
No, because you would not bother to think about it anymore, you see, saying... What is the point? You see, suppose you repeat the thought, you repeat it again and again. You see, why bother? You see, I'm merely repeating the thought down here instead of up here, you see.
What if we went the other direction? We couldn't, then once we felt an emotion or these gut feelings, then we could be aware of how the gut feelings were going to create the next thought.
That would be also right, yes.
Because I suggest that may be occurring.
It may be, yes. But you see, suppose we're not, ordinarily we're not aware in anger. When we are angry, we are aware that the apparent gut feeling is affecting the next thought, right? You can tell that your next thought is compelled to hold to the idea that I have good reason to be angry.
We give that feeling a meaning which is impelling the next thought.
That's right, because of the meaning.
Right. Well, it sounds like we have, and we're introducing an observer that affects the observed. Or am I overdoing
it? No, see, I'm trying to say that's the picture. It's like saying that the telephone in the television set has produced the ringing. You see, that's the experience you get.
Okay.
But
so
in fact,
creating a pixie.
You see, the experience you get is the cause of the ringing noise is there's a telephone over there, right? But that's due to the thought.
Okay, I got you.
Now you get the experience that there's something up here which is doing what? I mean, causing this down here, causing something else, right? So as long as it's attributed that way, see, the experience is affected by thought. See, we keep on thinking thought is one thing, experience is another, the sensations are another, the emotions are another, but it's all one system, right? Now, that's a very crucial point, to see that that is one whole system which extends into society because the thoughts spread out and come back, right? So even it's all one system, And it makes a big difference whether you think it's one system or it's many independent systems. Right? So you're making a false division, right? Between one part of the system and the other. Mm-hmm. There are right places to make divisions. For certain purposes, I can say I'm one thing and the glass is another because there's quite a bit of independence. But if I say I the thinker, am one thing, and the effect down here is another thing, that is wrong. That is a mistake, right?
Well, is this, let's see, maybe this isn't the proper what we're doing, but is the entire ego structure the same sort of thing, or is there something in there that we could call an ego that is not an illusion of that type?
Well, you see, I think it's a good question, but we are not yet in a position to answer it at present. You see, if the mind is full of this confusion, all this confusion is attributed to be the self, right? Just as like the television.
Oh, right.
It's telephone. You see, that is, whatever is going on inside you call the self, right?
Yeah.
It may be just all this stuff going on and still called the self. It's making a lot of effects, you see, and powerful, consistent. It's always there, you know, it keeps on going, it resists change, so it satisfies the criterion to be a real self, right? Mm. So you say, that is a real self, and therefore you will experience it as a real self, right? You see, by merely saying it is a real self or thinking it, even tacitly, you don't even have to put it in words, you experience it that way, you see. So thought is very powerful, and we'll discuss even later many more of its powers, you see. Thought is not just a sort of an abstract thing sitting around waiting to be used and so on. You see, thought is extremely powerful, and it is dynamic, and it goes on its own. It is a process. It affects the whole neurophysiological system. It goes out and in, and it makes illusions of all kinds. And these fantasies and illusions also are very powerful, right? Though they are really at bottom nothing, right? It's like a tremendous whirlwind produced by apparently nothing.
And the main source of this is some kind of feeling or idea that there's some kind of separation between all of them.
Well, there's an idea, there's a thought there, which is that these are all separate. They're different, independent things, systems, right? The thought is they're not one system. It's implicit, right? They're not one system. If you once say that they're all independent, therefore they cannot be one, right?
This seems to be the main point of departure from reality.
Yeah, so we are making a false division. I say, in other words, it's not to say that no thought should ever make a division, you see, that would, because there are places where it's correct to make a division, right? Where there is some independence. But in this system, there isn't any independence, and yet we are making a division.
This is seemingly the source of our difficulty.
Yeah, I call this fragmentation, you see. Fragment means, as in the word fragile, to smash, you see. We are breaking things up in a false way, and now not making real, true divisions. The same thing happens between nations, you see. We say, this is one nation, we assert the wholeness of this nation as independent of the rest, right? And therefore, we have a boundary and then we have the others, but actually they're all interdependent, right? So therefore, we are making a false division, right? Between nations, right? Between people, you know, between all sorts of things, right? We make a false division by asserting a false unity at the same time, right? By saying the nation is one when in fact it isn't. It's all sorts, all broken up. But we also say the ego is one when in fact we've seen how it's all broken up, haven't we, by its contradiction. It has many different thoughts pushing in different directions. So we are getting confused on the question of what is one and what is many, and what is a whole and what are the parts and so on.
This confusion just goes out into the world.
But then the action follows from that confusion, so we will create, apparently, the fragmentation that we imagine, right? That which we feel in us, that we think in us, we act accordingly, so we create, apparently, separate nations. We have now different languages, different customs, you know, different governments. We have a border which is hard to cross and so on. And saying here, that's proof of the reality of the nation, right?
These may have arisen from physical separations due to geography, but now some geography is exactly the same. They just draw a line and all of a sudden the people on one side of the line seem to feel like they're different and separate from the people on the other
side.
They
feel that way because they're thinking that way, right?
Right.
Because thinking and feeling are one process.
And that's why they drew the line in the first place, is they thought they were different.
Yes, well, then they said we must defend what's on this side of the line against what's on that side of the line, right?
Which is what's happening from my skin on in, or from my...
What?
That's also happening in here.
Yeah.
As an entity, I have something I need to defend and to protect. And that's why when something comes along that I feel like threatens the thing I think I have to protect or defend, it causes me to have these physical reactions. And that's where we're back into that whole thing again.
Are you saying that the thought of the self is what obscures the interrelationship among the parts of the nervous system?
Yeah. Yes, that the thought of the self and also of its structure, the thought that it could be divided as the thinker and the thought, the observer and the observed, and the thought, emotion and intellect. The thought that the self is of that nature is disrupting the function of the nervous system.
If there's no separation between the observer and the observed, for instance, I am my anger, what is the mechanism that's going to see that?
Well, we'll have to explore that. You see, just briefly, I mean, that could take, you know, some going into, but see, we're not saying that thought is the only thing that there is. We're merely saying that it has built up into this big process, which is producing all the mud we were talking about, is spattering things. And, and is making things obscure, right? So let me say briefly, and we can go into it later, that suppose, for the sake of argument, suppose that there is a process of observation which goes on. See, when the body knows that it is moving the hand, you don't ask what is the process, who is observing, right? It just knows. Suppose that there is a similar process at the more subtle mental levels.
That can't control thought.
What?
That can't control this thought.
It won't control it, but this thought is going wrong because it has a wrong idea about itself, right? Thought is merely doing what would be right if its assumptions about itself were right. Is that clear? If the assumption that the observer was different from the observed, then it would be right to try to control the observed. Is that clear? If the assumption that I am different from my anger were correct, then the next thing to do would be to start controlling my anger, right? As I can control this object which is different from me. So thought is only acting according to its assumptions about what is right. That's the way thought has to act, right? Even when its assumptions are right, it acts that way, and when they're wrong, it doesn't know it still acts that way. Is that clear? So therefore, maybe there has to be a process or some action, some perception, which can get through this confusion, right? See, that thought by itself will not be able to do it. You see, why is that? Well, there are many reasons we'd have to go into that, but one point is that thought cannot see this process that we were talking about, right? That it does not, it is not aware of its the wave of thought going down the pipeline. Right? Therefore, when the stuff appears down here, when the movement appears down here, it cannot do other than assume that it's independent and therefore it needs more thought and more control, right? Now, all that thought really is required to do is to stop, and 3 seconds later the pipeline will be clear and the problem is gone, right? Is that...
I hear what you're saying. I'm not sure.
Yeah, all right, let's discuss it.
Well, when you say that it'll know that when the pipeline is clear, I'm not...
Well, I'm saying, suppose the pipeline is clear, right? Then there's nothing stirring up the solar plexus. There's nothing, and therefore there's no reason to think some more about that anger, right?
Okay.
Therefore, the problem has vanished. You see, it's a terrific problem. I'm very angry at this person because of such and such reasons, right?
Right.
And the pipeline is full, and I try to stop being angry, but it keeps on going in the pipeline, right? Now, suppose in some way which we don't understand, thought were to stop, right?
Okay.
The problem would still continue for several seconds. This is very important, because you may think that if I stop thinking, the problem will disappear, right? That, if the problem is due to thought. That would be a mistake, right? which will confuse you, because the problem apparently continues, though you may have tried for a fraction of a second to stop thinking, right?
Well, we're saying something else besides thought is
yes, but I'm even before that, I'm saying suppose, for the sake of argument, that in one way or another, thought stopped for X seconds, right?
Okay.
Then all this emotional disturbance would stop, and it would not. And then you would have no, you would not feel this pressure to keep on thinking about anger, right?
Do you think it's accurate to say, it seems to me that once a person gets stirred up, it takes a long time for their body to slow down. Like if adrenaline is dumped out, it takes a lot longer for adrenaline to burn out than 3 seconds or something.
Well, it may take 10 seconds or 20, but the worst, the hardest is the first 3 seconds. You see, once the emotional response stops, then you merely find you're rather excited, and it's, you know, but for no apparent reason, right?
That's also part of what
yeah, but then you say, okay, I see I'm excited, I'll calm down, you see. But but if you say I have good reason to be angry, you can't calm down.
Right. I was just relating to whether the body, how long it really would take a body to be calm down.
Well, maybe it takes a minute, you see, but the first 3 seconds are the crucial point.
All right. So, David, anger's gone away that time, but anger's going to come up again.
Yeah, but then you have to understand, right. You have to understand this. If it went away by accident that way, you would have gotten, it's of no use, you see. But I really made it as an argument to understand the process, right? We have got to see this process so that it doesn't depend on accident that thought should stop, right?
And he was saying, is there something larger or ultra or that is going to do the seeing? I think that's what we were
asking. Yeah, that's right. But how are we going to answer that, in what way?
Well, the first thing maybe we could say is to realize that the attempt of thought to see itself is the same thing as thought having these reactions. It's just another kind of a reaction.
Yes, but I mean, but the confusion is that thought creates the sense of the observer, but in the same way that the telephone is created, that this attempt of thought to see itself is caught in this illusion that there is a separate entity who sees, right?
But to introduce even the idea or concept or the experiment that this may be so, that there isn't this separation, is to...
No, I'm saying, no, don't... If you impose that concept, you're still in the same situation.
I'm not imposing it, but just for thought to say, well, maybe what I'm doing isn't really accurate.
But that you can say that, and then we say that still we don't know what to do, right? You see, we have to be exploring this thing and not to jump to conclusions.
But I'm saying that for thought to ask what to do is part of the problem.
It may be part of the problem. You know, it probably is, but... But there may be something that thought can do, nevertheless. You see, so you have to be careful not to make this sharp yes or no, black or white. You see, there is a problem here. Well, we may suspect that thought can do nothing, you see, but we have no proof of that, right? We needn't jump ahead of what we know, right?
Well, but it might be a nice experiment to try.
Yes, but how will you try?
Well, thought is always assuming it knows what to do. That's part of the problem.
Yeah, what will you do then?
Well, what if it assumed it didn't know what to do?
All right, then if you don't know what to do, you don't know what to do. It still will still work, right?
Well, then it won't do anything.
Well, no, it will. No, you see, if somebody insults you, you will still react, right? It still goes into the pipeline, and 3 seconds later, you still don't know where it came from, and you still react, right?
Or then when the reaction happens in the body, the thought can say, this is a reaction.
Yes, but that's the trouble. We're back in the same problem. The word reaction doesn't explain the fact that where it comes from, you see. That is, say, if somebody hits your knee, you know, that's a knee-jerk reaction. But that is not the nature of this reaction, right? You see, this reaction is due to the fact that we have this response of thought which says there's an observer who is looking at anger. Yeah.
I'm saying is there seems to be a process of cycle.
Yeah.
It is. There isn't any place where it stops. There isn't thought starting, the emotions in the body, and then the emotions in the... It's this cyclical action.
Yeah.
And to me, thought is such a subtle thing that it's so hard to see, but it's not hard to see. Everybody knows what you're talking about when you say you have a gut reaction. Now, why can't the observation start at the gut reaction?
You can try that, but I think you'll find that if you're really angry, it will amount to an attempt to control the gut reaction, you see. because you can't, if you're really angry, you will either say, I must do something about that, and you know, about that person and get even, or you say, I must control it.
Well, but that's, see, you use such an extreme case when in the average there's just this general feedback between the body and thought that carries us through every day, and they're all little things, little eruptions, and maybe these big eruptions are anger because we haven't even been paying attention to the little ones. But most people are constantly just going through life with this small energy going back and forth and feeding itself. And every time I get a feeling in my body, and I recognize it as a feeling that's being caused extra, how can I say, extra necessary or something, well then I don't give it that emotion, the meaning. I don't give it the meaning, and then where does it go from there?
Now, but can you do that, you see, because you haven't seen the origin, and therefore you don't know that it has no meaning.
But the mean, the feeling tells me there was an origin.
What, thought?
Well, maybe, yes.
No, but I mean, that, does that actually happen, that you get a feeling which tells you that it came from a thought?
Well, I don't know how that happens, but it's the way I approach it. If I get a feeling like something's wrong, I don't immediately start looking for the thing that's wrong, because that would be responding to the feeling which came from the previous thought. I may stop and actually check my surroundings and see if anything's wrong, but then we know what emotional feelings are. And that's what we're talking about. And then if a person says, oh, this is an emotional feeling that's being caused by my thoughts, well then where's the next thought?
But do you know that do you actually know that it was caused by your thought? You see, that's, or are you merely thinking it? You see, this is a...
All right, well that would be a point. If you just thought it was, you'd be right back in it.
Yeah, but you have to have a direct knowledge that it is caused by your thought, you see, as well as thinking it, right?
If you just had a rule or something, that wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Because then you might cut out things.
Yeah, you might cut out emotions that are important, and also, anyway, it wouldn't work because unless you actually have a more direct perception of it, then it doesn't really work.
All right.
There's another tendency here. you have, in other words, I assume an observer, an ego, there's some of me in here that has this, that can observe, can control, it will stop this thing, only it won't because it's imaginary, all right? So I create a super observer, a super self, a super being that will do this. Well, that doesn't work either, and so I give myself to God, or whoever created the universe, and he's going to do it. Well, that won't work either.
Well, the reason it doesn't work is that whether there is God or not, you see, it is all the same as the program in the television set. That is, that is, you could also have God appearing in the television set too. You see,
sure.
You see that it would have no more meaning. You see that something has to happen which is outside that pattern, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Somehow the content of thought has to suggest the process.
Well. We won't say exactly. You see, and we have to explore this thing. We don't want to assume that thought has absolutely nothing to do with it, or that, to make assumptions beforehand would put us in the same boat, because they would still be just thought projecting this image. You see, and there's always that danger that you decide beforehand what you think it is, and you experience it that way, and you say, "Okay, you understood it." And then really, you've got nowhere. Well, and perhaps we'll continue this afternoon. But before we do that, we have one or two things. There are going to be smaller meetings in the afternoon, as we had last year, four groups of roughly 12 in each group. And for those, and if you don't wish to go, of course, that's fine too. But many people have found them helpful. And the purpose this year we're proposing is that rather than report in detail on what happened, that you try to find one or two questions which are important to you. You know, the group should settle on at least one or possibly two questions, and we'll just report those questions. Now, it doesn't mean that I'm going to answer them. because we're saying this whole discussion is not aimed at solving problems and giving answers anyway. But it will help show all of us what the thinking of the group is, and will perhaps, you know, bring us together more. And the that will be 1 hour, and there will probably be one person in each group who will sort of be a coordinator of some kind, and he will report. And now the only thing remains to do is to count off. If you do not wish to go, just don't when you're t- turn comes, just don't say anything, go on to the next, right? If you do it.